Okay, gentlemen, we are learning Masechta Shabbos. There is an awful lot to say on this Tosos on Lamed Daled, excuse me, on Lamed Tes Omed Aleph. If you remember, the Mishnah on Kuf Mem He tells me that Kol Shabba B'chaim Lefnei HaShabbos, Shorin Oso B'chaim B'Shabbos. Anything that was already, let's say, cooked before Shabbos, you're allowed to soak on Shabbos. We had a machlokes and with respect to this issue of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, we pointed out that there is a dispute between the Rambam and the Rashba on the fundamental level, that the Rashba says that once food is cooked to the extent of Maichal Ben Drusai, once food is cooked to the one-third mark or one-half mark, so once that occurs, so we will apply the rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. That's the opinion of the Rashba. However, the Rambam says that no, that to apply the rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, the food has to be fully cooked. This is what we noted from the Rambam in Perek Tes of Hilchos Shabbos. The Magid Mishnah over there quotes the Rashba. This is Judaism 102. It's not 101. 101 was this pasuk's parasha Bereishis. This is 102. Beautiful. Now, the opinion of Tosis, however, requires a little bit of explanation, and we began this last time we learned. Tosis on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, Kosher Bo Bechamim Lefnei HaShabbos, Tosis says, Perush Nisbashel Legamre. Right? Tosis comments that we only apply the rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul when food is fully cooked. And he proves this from the Gemara there on Kuf Mem Hei Amid Beis. The Gemara says, what's the example of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul? The Gemara says it's the famous chicken of Reb Abba, the Tarnagolta de Reb Abba, which basically means that the food is cooked and recooked and recooked many, many times. That's what Rashi writes over there on Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis, Mivashla Shernosa Yomim Rabin B'chamin. You leave it in hot water for a very long time. It's completely soft. You eat it l'refua. That's the position of Rashi. Tosos is saying that Kosher Ba B'chamin means it's fully cooked because Tarnagolta de Reb Abba is fully cooked. And because it's fully cooked, you could even put it in a Kli Rishon, etc. Everything is beautiful. So the simple meaning of Tosos.
Tarnagolas sounds like my stomach rialo. Like it sounds like it's awful if you're eating just their food, no?
I don't know if it's mitznamek yafalo, mitznamek rialo. Again, I have no idea how it tastes. Again, we also only encountered the issue of mitznamek yafalo, mitznamek rialo in normal Judaism. We only encounter that issue with respect to the dinim of Hachazara or Shehiya, right? With respect to the dinim of Shehiya, that we only have the fact that it will improve with respect to leaving it on the fire from before Shabbos. Within the sugya of Bishul Achar Bishul, we noted that according to the Rambam, once something is fully cooked, there's no Bishul, even though it's mitzdamek v'yafalo, presumably, it will not change the actual Bishul status. You already pointed out last time we learned it, two times ago, you're very into this Baal HaMa'ar. When I said in standard Judaism, I meant as opposed to that position of the Baal HaMa'ar. But let's just continue what we're up to. So according to Tosos on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, we only apply the rule of Ba B'chamin if the food is fully cooked. However, everyone asks a question that Tosos at the beginning of our parak, when we had a dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about what are you allowed to return, Beis Shammai says chamin, but not tavshil. Beis Hillel says you can return chamin and tavshil. So Tosus over there tries to define the terms. And Tosus says that chamin and tavshil means even if it's not fully cooked, even if it's only cooked kemaichol ben drusai. Now, here's the thing. The Mishnah over there is speaking about returning the food to the fire. That means that what I am doing is I am taking this pot, it was on the fire at the beginning of Shabbos, but it's not fully cooked yet. It's only Machal Ben Drusai. I'm going to take it off the fire and put it back on. So the problem is, shouldn't that be an Isser of Bishul on Shabbos? Right? Because if Tosos is correct, that we only apply the rule of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul once it's fully cooked. So if that's the case, how can I put food back on the fire, even though the fire is covered, etc.? But how can I return food to that fire on Shabbos when presumably what I am doing is cooking? That was the question that we addressed last time. So last time, one of the fellows, I forgot who, one of the fellows suggested that maybe the solution to this problem is that the Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amid Beis is talking about Hachazara. Hachazara means I am returning it to the fire. In other words, I'm continuing that original action which I did. So consequently, it's not really Bishul. It's not really cooking, because even though it wasn't cooked completely before Shabbos, it was only cooked to the extent of Ma'achal Ben Drusai, but nonetheless, it is going to be permitted, because what I am doing is I am continuing that action of cooking. That's what one of the fellows suggested. It's an interesting suggestion. It could be it's correct, but I think we'd need a little more evidence, because it is hard to explain why we would permit taking food. Yeah, so it began Erev Shabbos, but how can I permit putting that pot on the fire on Shabbos? It really sounds very much like cooking. So it seems to be a problem. And therefore, I have a contradiction in Tosos. Tosos on Lamed Tes says I only apply in Bishul Achar Bishul when food is fully cooked. That's the opinion of the Rambam. Tosos on Lamed Vav Amid Beis presents us with presumably what is the opinion of the Rashba, that once food is cooked a third of the way, there is no further cooking. This is our contradiction in the Tosos. Any suggestions, gentlemen, besides that Bahamur suggestion, which we weren't crazy about? Any suggestions as to why, as to how we can reconcile the Tosfos? Over Shabbos, I was reading a book by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, where he argues that throughout Parshas Bereishis, we see a lot of questions. God knows the answer, but he turns to Adam, he says, Ayeka, right? He turns to Cain, he says, E hevel achicha. He turns to Chava, he says, Mazos asis, right? So this fellow was arguing that Parshas Bereishis is there to teach us proper educational tools, that a rhetorical question or any question is a better way of teaching because it brings the students in to the lesson. That's why questions are so important, Leil HaSeder. So I realized when I read this that maybe I'm not doing as good of a job as a teacher as I should be, because instead of just saying things, I should be asking questions. Because that draws the students in more. I thought it was an interesting point. So I'm asking a question. Does anyone have a solution to this Tosos?
Do we know for a fact that you can do Hachzar with food that's Mechel Ben Drusai?
Tosos is explaining the Mishnah, which is talking about Hachzara, and it says, according to Beisol, I can return them a chamin and tafshel, and chamin and tafshel means machu ben drusai according to Tosis.
Right.
The way Tosis defines the terms on lamed vav amid beis, I am returning food that is cooked to machu ben drusai. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I have three suggestions to answer this problem. You'll tell me what you think of them. One thing I'll say at the onset is obviously Tosos is neither like the Rambam nor like the Rashba. Right? The Rashba says once it's Machal Ben Drusai, all is permitted. Tosa says it's forbidden, right? Until it's Mevushal Kol Tzarko. The Rambam holds nothing is permitted until it is Mevushal Kol Tzarko. Tosa says on Lamed Vav that Hachazara is permitted. So what's the issue? So they have this sefer, which I have in my office now. It's called the Minchas Ariel on Shabbos. Basically, it is, if any of you are going to be Rebbeim and teach Shabbos, this is the ideal cheating book. Because he quotes all of the sources. He puts it together very nicely. He's bothered by this question, obviously. And he quotes from a number of Svarim that maybe when Tosfos says that the food has to be cooked completely, Tosos is not referring to the regular rules of Ein Bishal Achar Bishal. What Tosos is doing is he's foreshadowing the continuation of Tosos, where Tosos says, ordinarily, I am not supposed to put anything in a kli sheni because it has the appearance of cooking. Putting food in a kli sheni is mechzi kemevashel, according to Tosfos's first explanation in the continuation of Tosfos. So this sefer argued that maybe when Tosfos is saying that food has to be fully cooked in order to put it in the cup, Tosfos is not referring to the regular rules of Ein Bishal Achar Bishal, but Tosfos is referring to the principle that even in a kli sheni, it's mechzi kemevashel. And by extension, if I hold of this rule of mechzi kemevashel, that things are forbidden because it has the appearance of cooking. So therefore, if it's forbidden in a kli sheni, it's certainly forbidden even in a kli rishon because of mechzi kemevashel. It appears like cooking. And if that's the case, maybe the idea in Tosfos is as follows. When Tosfos on Lamed Tesamid Aleph forbids putting food in a kli rishon because it's not fully cooked yet, the prohibition is not really cooking. The prohibition is the appearance of cooking. Fundamentally, there is no cooking because the food has already risen to the level of ma'achol ben shrusoi. And fundamentally, Tosfos holds, like the Rashba, that there is no cooking once food is ma'achol ben shrusoi. But there is a rabbinic prohibition called the appearance of cooking. And I have a problem that it appears like cooking until the food is fully cooked. Maybe what Tosfos is getting at in this first explanation is, again, based on the continuation of Tosfos, who invents a category of the appearance of cooking. So yes, Tosfos later on is inventing appearance of cooking even in a kli sheni. But perhaps we could say that in a kli rishon, there is also the appearance of cooking in the sense of food that is cooked halfway. It appears like you are cooking it when you put it in a kli rishon. But on daf lamed vav amid beis, where we are putting the food on a stove, which is garif v'katam, I'm putting the food on the stove that is already covered, there's already a blech, etc., so there's no appearance of cooking. That's one way of explaining the Tosfos. In a related way of explaining
it, he never actually meant that it was the right time.
Tosfos did not actually mean that it's full cooking until, right? It could be that it's not really cooking after Machol Ben Drusai, but there is still an appearance of cooking.
So then the Tosfos would agree with the Rashba that you just need a little cook, or like one third cooked is good enough. But,
correct.
So he's just worried about Marisayan.
That's correct. In other words, according to the Din D'Oraisa, according to Torah law, once food is one-third cooked, It's grand. Mm-hmm. No problem. There's no problem with Ein B'Shachar Bishul. But there is a rabbinic problem if I take food from a third of the way cooked and I make it all the way cooked. How I define that rabbinic problem, so I'm using the term mechzi kemevashel, the appearance of cooking. You said maris ayin, which is probably correct. Although, just to let you into my thoughts from this morning, I'm not sure what Tosfos means when he speaks about the appearance of cooking. Tosfos might mean that it has the appearance of cooking, maris ayin. People will look at me and they'll think that I'm doing an Avera. But alternatively, it could be a slightly more nuanced version of that, that people will see me cooking and they themselves will come to cook. It's not just that they'll think I'm a bad Jew, but it's something akin to the prohibition of Lifnei Iver, that when I cook and it has the appearance of cooking, it might lead you to do the same action. Again,
now, wouldn't the Rashba be afraid of that? So the Rashba doesn't have a problem with
that. Right, so apparently not. Like, now, once we turn the tables, so the Rashba becomes very difficult. How come there is no rabbinic prohibition of the appearance of cooking? I have a suggestion to that, but I want to say it later on once we talk about Tosis' presentation of the appearance of cooking later on in Tosos. But basically what we're suggesting now is that Tosos fundamentally agrees with the Rashba, but it's rabbinically forbidden to go from a third of the way to all of the way. Mr. Nady, how are you?
Baruch Hashem. Just sort of tangentially what you were talking about with Ari, I always thought Mexican Vashel was just sort of the Rabbanan making a gather of this is too similar to real Bishul, we're going to answer it. Not because of Chashad or Marisayan, however you want to be Michalik between those two, but just, you know, it's too similar and slippery slope kind of thing.
So again, I think by using those words slippery slope, you are already taking a side. Slippery slope means we're worried it's going to lead to something else. Right? Now, that sounds like a concern that if you see me cooking in a kli sheni, you yourself might come to cook in a kli rishon. That would seem to be the slippery slope approach. It's closer to lifnei iver as opposed to being closer to the prohibition of that I have an obligation to retain my reputation, to make my reputation as good as I could be. That's called the Yisem Mekim
Yisem Yisrael. Like you yourself might come to slip down the slope. It's not you might make somebody else slip down the slope. That's also
I think those two ideas are quite similar. Again, I hear where you're coming from, right? In other words, it's impossible to talk about Lifnei Iver for myself. It could be that it's talking about like a slippery slope, which is tantamount to Lifnei Iver for me. I think that's your suggestion. That's just interesting.
Regular Timishmeres Timishmarti.
I didn't hear what you said.
I thought it was just like a regular Timishmeres Timishmarti.
Right, but again, I would argue with most Isurim that we have to question exactly this issue. Mm-hmm. What is precisely the problem? Right? Why did the Chachamim, Asum Ishmet L'Mishmarti means the Chachamim instituted a Din D'Rabbanan? Why? Rabbis don't just invent stuff. They had a reason behind it. It could be because it's too close to cooking, has the appearance of cooking. Right? Or it could be because since it has the appearance of cooking, it might lead you to cook. And you're suggesting maybe it has the appearance of cooking and I might make a mistake later on. Okay. So now, so far, we have a contradiction in Tosfos. Does the food have to be fully cooked or does it suffice if the food is machol ben drusai? And we suggested one answer that fundamentally Tosfos agrees with the Rashba. Rav Michael HaKohen Forschlager, who we now know who he is because Nady sent out a brief biography of Rav Forshlager that was published in the Jewish Observer or something at one point. So Rav Forshlager in Simon Yud Aleph of his Sefer Toras Michael has an interesting idea. He suggests that maybe, I'll give an example. You know, in Gemara times, there were two types of full-term babies. There was a 7-month full-term baby, and there was a 9-month full-term baby. Right? There are two different full terms. But it's possible that there is something which is between month 7 and month 9, and the halacha does not consider that full term at all. The halacha says that adding incrementally does not mean that you are substantively changing it. Now, this is a very rough parallel to babies, but with respect, I'm only thinking about babies because I gave a shiur yesterday about abortion and different Roe v. Wade basically broke the abortion law down to the different trimesters. In the case of Casey versus Planned Parenthood, they got rid of these distinctions of trimesters. My understanding is that halacha, in its approach to abortion, is closer to Roe than it is to Casey. That was the shiur I gave yesterday. But the idea is as follows. Rashba says, if I cook something a third of the way, that is considered fully cooked. That means that ein bishal achar bishal, when something is cooked a third of the way, further cooking is not going to be a problem unless you cook it further and it becomes mevushal kol tzarko. Rav Michal Forshlager explains that there are two steps. There's a fully cooked food item at a third of the way. The halacha views it like that's fully cooked because now it's edible. Then there is another stage of fully cooked when it's all the way fully cooked. And then halacha says, okay, it's fully cooked because no further cooking does anything. Anything between a third of the way and all the way is not halachically significant. Therefore, Tosfos on Lamed Vav Amid Beis says, I'm allowed to take food, which is a third of the way cooked, and put it on an oven, which is Garif Fakatum, because Rav Forshlager, the man was a super genius, he had like a bunch of Yerushalmis that proved this idea, that once the oven is Garif Fakatum, it will never cook food all the way to the stage of fully cooked. It ain't gonna happen. Because Garif Fakatum accomplishes that it is cooled down. That's what we quoted from Rashi at the beginning of the Perek. Once it's cooled down, so yes, the food will get hotter, but it will never rise to that level of fully cooked. When I take food, however, and I put that food in a kli rishon means a pot that was on the fire. You take that pot off the fire, you put the food in it. Food can get fully cooked in a kli rishon. Where Rav Michal Forshlager is suggesting, which I think is really creative, is as follows. There's no contradiction between Tosos on Lamed Vav and Tosos on Lamed Tes. Because on Lamed Vav, I'm talking about an oven, which is Garif Fakatum. So once the food is a third of the way cooked, you could put it back on the stove. The food will get hotter. Who cares? It's never going to rise to that level of fully cooked. But on Lamed Tesom and Aleph, when I'm putting the food in a Kli Rishon, it is possible that the food will get fully cooked in a Kli Rishon. And therefore, in order to permit it, it has to be fully cooked, as in completely fully cooked, right? Basically, there are two definitions of cooking, and the incremental change. Avery, were you the one who asked about incremental change last time, or is that Jake? What have you asked about? Isn't incremental cooking also a problem? You make something more cooked. I would suggest, or Rav Michael Forschlager suggests, absolutely not. The halachic definition of cooking is one of two things. 7-month baby, 9-month baby. Anything in between is not. I mean, again, Medina de Gemara, an 8-month baby is not considered viable. Actually, medically speaking, some of the organs are at a very difficult in-between stage. 8-month babies, even if you put them in the incubator, might not fully help. A 7-month baby, if precisely because there's less development, so the baby can develop more in an incubator, 8th month is a more dangerous time in childbirth than 7th month, which is slight evidence to what the Gemara says. But applying that to cooking means 1/3 is cooking and fully cooked is cooking, but moving between 1/3 and fully cooked is nothing. And once it's garfa kutum, it will never rise to the level of fully cooked. I see some comments. Nader, you had a comment?
I was just going to clarify. It sounds like he's suggesting that Tosos really holds that there is bishul acher bishul. It's just that if you don't get to fully cooked, then it doesn't count.
That's correct. In other words, explanation 2, Rav Michael Forschlager's explanation, is very different than explanation 1. Explanation 1 is saying that Tosos fundamentally holds like the Rashba, but there's a rabbinic prohibition of cooking it further. Rav Michael Forschlager's explanation is very different. But Forschlager is saying Tosos holds both that it's considered fully cooked at 1/3, and it's considered fully cooked all the way, when it's cooked all the way. The only thing is I'm allowed to return food to the fire because I will never change it to that heightened level of Mavushal Kol Tzarko. Ari, you had a comment?
Yeah, I'm just, since you raised the babies, what is the halachic distinction between a 7-month and a 9-month baby?
So halachically, both a 7-month baby and a 9-month baby is full term. An 8-month baby is halachically not full term. So much so, the Gemara has a comment that a baby that's born in the 8th month is considered muktzah on Shabbos. You can't even move it because the baby is not viable at all. Just like, again, lahavdo, we're not allowed to move a corpse on Shabbos. This baby is a living corpse. Right now, it's temporarily living. Again, it could be, it's likely that this is one of those halachos where we apply the principle of nishtana hatavaim. Tosu says in many areas that nature changed. How we understand whether nature changed or not is a full topic, but it could be that at the time of the Gemara, eight month babies were not viable. We know in today's world, thank God, they do live. It might be more dangerous than a 7-month baby, but they do live. Okay, so that's what we wanted to comment with respect to Tosus's position of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul.
Rabbi?
Ben, you have a comment?
Yeah, just a question. If the food could get to fully cooked, is every subsequent cooking considered a Bishul Achar Bishul, or only when it actually gets from Eichel Ben Yosai to fully cooked?
I think Michael Forschlager is saying that food that's cooked 1/3 of the way is halachically cooked. If I cook the food and it becomes cooked all the way, then I violated the halachic prohibition of cooking again, because I am now making it the different form of cooking, that improved version of cooking. But every stage between 1/3 of the way and all the way is halachically insignificant. It's really cool. I think it's cool. Forschlager really, he proves this from Yerushalmi. The man knew a ton. Okay, should we go on and tell us this, gentlemen? Let's go on. Now, Tosfos has a discussion with respect to Iroi. We'll talk about this, God willing, tomorrow. I'm going to go a teeny bit out of order now, just because I'd rather do the smaller topic before the larger topic. There's a dispute about what is the halachic status of pouring hot water onto another item. A kli rishon cooks. Food is in the pot. Even though the pot is no longer on the fire, it can cook halachically. Kli rishon cooks. Kli sheni does not cook halachically. I take that pot and I pour it into another cup. So I could put stuff in that other cup. Again, we'll have to discuss the rules and regulations of this as we go on. But kli sheni does not cook. What about iroi? What about that in-between stage? I take the pot and I pour the water and it hits something. Let's assume it hits it with a direct stream. It has not yet landed in the second cup. It's not yet a kli sheni, but it's also not a full kli rishon. That's called iroi. And there is a dispute in the Tosfos. What is the status of iroi? Tosfos quotes from the Rashba. The Rashba probably does not exist in this context. It's probably the Rashbam. The Rashash changes the text. We know it's the Rashbam throughout Shas has an opinion that iroi has the status of a kli sheni. Pouring is a kli sheni because the Rashbam is assuming that once it is going through the air, it's like a kli sheni. It's only a kli rishon when it's the same pot, when you have those walls that were on the fire, then it's a kli rishon. Once it's going through the air, it's no longer connected to the fire at all. Right? When the pot itself that was on the fire absorbed the heat of the fire. So even though it's off the fire, it's still functionally the equivalent of being on the fire to a limited extent. But once I'm pouring out of that pot, the Rashbam says it's a kli sheni, it doesn't cook at all. The Rabbeinu Tam, the way Tosfos quotes the Rabbeinu Tam over here, the Rabbeinu Tam, who is the brother of the Rashbam, says that iroi does cook. It's considered a kli rishon. Now, what we'll discuss tomorrow is that the Rabbeinu Tam in many other locations does not say this. He assumes that iroi cooks somewhat. It cooks kedei klipa, but such an opinion does not appear in our Tosfos. Our Tosfos quotes the Rabbeinu Tam that iroi does not, excuse me, the Rabbeinu Tam that iroi cooks fully. Grand. Based on this, Tosfos says, one second. When the Mishnah on Kuf Memhe says that food which was fully cooked, you're allowed to pour hot water on it. Or other foods, you can pour hot water on it. That makes sense according to the Rashbam, because pouring hot water is not cooking. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, that pouring the water is cooking. So how is it that the Mishnah Kuf Mem He could say that you are allowed to take kol shaloba b'chamin melufnei haShabbos, food that was not fully cooked, madichin oso, you're allowed to pour hot water on it? According to Rabbeinu Tam, how can I pour hot water on this uncooked food? That's Tosis's problem. So Tosis says, well, Rabbeinu Tam will have to interpret the Mishnah that when the Mishnah says I'm allowed to pour hot water on the uncooked food, that means I am pouring hot water from a kli sheni. Okay? So here's the case. I have a pot with hot water. It's on the fire. I take that pot off the hot water. I pour that hot water into a second cup. Then, right, food that was not yet cooked, kosher lo b'chamin lefnei haShabbos, madichin also b'chamin b'Shabbos, means, according to Rabbeinu Tam, take that kli sheni and pour from the kli sheni onto the uncooked food. Tosfos says that would imply that you're only allowed to pour from a kli sheni onto uncooked food, but you cannot put that uncooked food into a kli sheni. This goes against Judaism as we normally understand it. Tosfos is suggesting I cannot put uncooked food in a kli sheni. It's forbidden. And the reason why it's forbidden, Tosfos says, right, we could read it inside, but Omeri, da'afilu b'kli sheni ein shorin, ho'el da'hamayim chamin, mechzi k'mevashel. You cannot even put it into a kli sheni, because since the water is hot, it appears like you're cooking. And even though we say on membeis on membeis that I'm allowed to put spices into a kli sheni, that's only spices. But ordinary food you can't put in a kli sheni. Haynu davka tavlin shehin asuyin lematek esmikadeh. That is only spices, because spices simply mimatekes hakadera, they make the food taste better. I cook meat and I have some spices on the meat. No one in their right mind is going to say, you're cooking spices. You're cooking meat. The spices are ancillary. They're completely secondary. They are just flavoring the main thing that you're cooking. Tosfos is saying ordinary food, food that gets cooked, you cannot put in a kli sheni. Only spices can be put in a kli sheni, because the simple understanding of Tosfos is that spices are not the issue in a kli sheni. Is the appearance of cooking. Spices never convey the appearance of cooking, because when I put spices on food, what I'm really doing is I am cooking the food, and there's the appearance of cooking on the food, because someone sees food in a kli sheni, they're not going to know if that pot is a kli rishon or kli sheni. It has the appearance of cooking on the meat. But the spices never has the appearance of cooking. That's Tosfos' suggestion.
Even in a kli rishon? Then can you put spices in a kli rishon?
So in a kli rishon, I'm not allowed to put spices, because in a kli rishon, there is real cooking that's going on. I only allow putting spices in a kli sheni, because in a kli sheni, the only issue is nothing.
Which you don't have in it, with the kli
rishon. That has the appearance of cooking, and by definition, spices never have the appearance of cooking. That is what Rousseau suggests. Tosfos develops this idea that food, you can never put stuff in the kli sheni, because it always has the appearance of cooking. At the very end of Tosfos, Tosfos moves away from this. Tosfos says, Inami, four lines before the end of Tosfos, who had in shorin also, caven the ayri b'kli sheni, v'hadinakat madichin, la'ashmi'inan da'afilu haddocha havye gemar melocha b'moliach ha'yoshan v'koyas ha'ispinin. Tosfos in the second answer says that you are allowed to put food in a kli sheni. There is no concern of mechzi kemevash on a kli sheni. It never has the appearance of cooking. But the reason why the Mishnah speaks about pouring water from a kli sheni is to teach me that by koyas ha'ispinin, by these tuna, the very soft fish that's easily cooked, it's forbidden even if you pour from a kli sheni. Ordinary food is going to be permitted even in a kli sheni. You could put it in a kli sheni. So let's just review. There are two opinions in Tosfos. Opinion number one in Tosfos is that you are never allowed to put any item in a klisheni. There is always mechzika mevashel. Opinion two in Tosfos is that you are able, you are permitted to put food in a klisheni. There is no concern of mechzi kimavashel. The reason why, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the Mishnah speaks about pouring from a klisheni is to tell me the chumrah, that you're not allowed to pour even from a klisheni onto a tuna. That is the Tosos. So, functionally speaking, there are two opinions in Tosos, whether you're allowed to put food in a klisheni. Shulchan Aruch sides with the second opinion in Tosos. Normative Judaism, the standard approach, what we grew up with as children, is you can put food in a klisheni. The second opinion of Tosos seems to be accepted. However, Rabbi Abraham Gumbiner, he died in the year 1683. He wrote the Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch. If you want to know, to my mind, the greatest contribution of the Magen Avraham, remember, 1683 is when he died. The Magen Avraham is the first person in the regular Jewish world who brought Lurianic Kabbalah into the halachic process. There were people who quoted Zohars before the Magen Avraham. The Zohar is a halachic source that occasionally makes it to the Shulchan Aruch, right? Last night we did Havdalah. You, at Havdalah, many people have a practice, right, that you do fingers to the candle. The earliest source of that is Zohar. There are halachos from the Zohar that make it to Shulchan Aruch. But Lurianic Kabbalah, Kabbalah that began from the Arizal, the Sefer Hecholos, etc., it was not until the Magen Avraham that that was incorporated into halacha. Again, this is my understanding of the Magen Avraham's contribution, among others. So the Magen Avraham in Shin Yud Ches, both in Se'if Katin Tes Vav and in Se'if Katin Yud Ches, the Magen Avraham says, you know what? The halacha follows the first opinion in Tosos, that there is a din of mechzi kemevashel. And that means that you are not allowed to put food in a kli sheni because it has the appearance of cooking. Ordinary food cannot be put in a kli sheni. Spices, you can, because the appearance of cooking does not apply to spices. The Magen Avraham notes that when we talk about spices, what we mean is anything that gives flavor to a food, any secondary ingredient. Onions can be put in a klisheni, according to the Magen Avraham. Because most often, my grandfather, I believe, my father will correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that my grandfather, like many European Jews, used to just take a bite out of an onion and enjoy the way it tasted. There are some people who do that. In our world, no one does that. And certainly, it's not standard. Most often, onions are used to flavor other food. So the Magen Avraham says, I'm allowed to put onion into a kli sheni because onion is considered tavlin. Onion is spices. The Taz disagrees with the Magen Avraham. And the Taz says you cannot put onion into a kli sheni if you are worried about mechzik mevashel or you're worried about the other things that we'll speak about with the kli sheni, kale, habishal, etc. Magen Avraham says onions you can put in a kli sheni. The Taz says you cannot put onions into a kli sheni. Just one second, Ari. A similar example of this that comes up is, can I put lemon into my tea? I have tea, let's say, in a kli sheni. Can I put lemon into that tea? Chazon Ish says, why not? Right? Lemon is spices. spice, right? Why do you put lemon in tea? You put lemon in tea because you want the lemon to flavor the tea. That's spices. Others disagree with that chazon-ish. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Chelek Daled, Simen Ayin Daled, Os Yud Ches of Bishul. Rav Moshe says that lemon is not considered spices. We'll try to explain this idea perhaps in a few minutes, but the Magen Avraham fundamentally has a huge chumrah that basically undoes all of Kli Sheni's. Because I cannot put food in a Kli Sheni unless somehow that food is considered tavlin, which means, according to the Magen Avraham, the type of food that is intended to flavor something else as opposed to being the primary ingredient. Ari?
So, which brings us to the question of tea, which is probably a very big issue. I don't know if you want to get into it now, but is that considered a spice or is it considered a food?
So here's the thing. We'll talk about tea in much greater detail later on, but if you look in Rabbi Schechter's book, The Nefesh HaRav, on page 170, I'm pretty sure it's 170. Page 170, letter Yod. So Rav Schechter quotes that Rav Soloveitchik had the following expression. He said, my grandfather was also an Orthodox Jew. His grandfather is Rav Chaim. And his grandfather would make tea in the Kli Sheni. We generally assume that we don't make food in the Kli Sheni because even though on the fundamental level, Kli Sheni does not cook, but there are certain items that cook more easily. And therefore, we're worried that they will cook in the Kli Sheni, but spices does not cook in the Kli Sheni. Reb Chaim said, you can make tea in the Kli Sheni on Shabbos. That means, right? Ready? Take water from the urn, right? Don't stick your tea bag into the urn itself, but take water from the urn, stick the tea bag into that first cup, right? It's just a Kli Sheni. Reb Chaim said that's how you make tea on Shabbos because tea is spices. There are standard Judaism is not like this for one of two reasons. Reason one, if the definition of spices is something that is there to flavor something else. So when I make a cup of tea, my intention is for the tea itself, right? When I have spices on the piece of meat, I'm really cooking the meat, right? And the spices add flavor to the meat. Over here, I want the tea to flavor the water. It's not like I'm cooking the water and the water is primary and the tea is secondary. The tea is the primary thing that I'm cooking, the tea leaf, right? That's the primary thing that I'm cooking. That's one reason to disagree with Rav Soloveitchik. Another reason to disagree with Rav Soloveitchik is as follows. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's quoted in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. I forgot which footnote. The Shmir Shabbos quotes that Rav Shlomo Zalman said, maybe when we permit putting spices in the Kli Sheni, that's only the type of spices that they had in ancient times, which were thick chunks. But today, that our spices are granulated. They're very small, so they actually cook more easily. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman suggested. In the book Orchos Shabbos, Jake, yes?
Wouldn't that be premised not on how we're learning Kli Sheni right now? I thought this version of Kli Sheni is premised on Mexican Mevashel. So spices are spices, whether or not they're ground or not. Nobody's.
The idea of tavlin, apparently, is not because, right? Again, we're rejecting the idea of Mexican Mevashel. The assumption is that the opinion of Mexican Mevashel, although the Magen Avraham holds of it, and the Magen Avraham would forbid putting anything in a Kli Sheni because it's Mexican Mevashel, we hold that Mexican Mevashel is not a governing principle. But
how do we get an answer to cooking Kli Sheni? That's so from the thing that I've seen, I haven't seen a lot.
Mexican Mevashel is not a governing principle, and fundamentally Kli Sheni should not cook. Nonetheless, we'll discuss as we go on this semester that there are certain things that Kli Sheni does cook because they cook more easily. Those are called Kalei Habishal. And the Mishneh Berurah and before him the Sefer Yerayim assumed that we have to be concerned that the majority of our foods will cook in a Kli Sheni. Only stuff that I know definitely does not cook in a Kli Sheni, only that am I allowed to put in a Kli Sheni. Again, this is Judaism according to the Mishneh Berurah. We'll discuss those who disagree. Reb Shlomo Zalman, working within that opinion, says, okay, one of the exceptions, one of the things that we know for sure does not cook in a Kli Sheni is tavlin. But the tavlin that they were talking about was thicker tavlin. Our tavlin today is thinner, and therefore it will cook in a Kli Sheni. According to Reb Shlomo Zalman Arbach, obviously the tea leaves, which are in a tea bag, let's say, those tea leaves are very thin. They're really granulated, so it will cook in a Kli Sheni. And therefore, the explanation that the approach that Reb Chaim had might not be acceptable. That's what Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying, that our tavlin today is different than their tavlin at the time of the Gemara. So again, let's just review. What we have is a dispute between the Magen Avraham and the Shulchan Aruch. Magen Avraham says a Kli Sheni is forbidden. You cannot put food in a Kli Sheni because it's Mechzik HaMevashel. You can only put tavlin in a Kli Sheni. Shulchan Aruch assumes, no, we follow the second opinion in Tosos, that you can put food in a Kli Sheni. Now, within the opinion number one of Tosos, which is accepted by the Magen Avraham, that the definition of tavlin, according to opinion one of Tosos, which the Magen Avraham accepts, that I am allowed to put tavlin in the Kli Sheni, there are two reasons that are given. One reason is the way we've been saying it until now, which is that Kli Sheni is forbidden because it has the appearance of cooking. Tavlin never has the appearance of cooking because spices, it appears like they are flavoring something else, not that you're cooking the spices itself. That's the first explanation. There is a second explanation, however, that is slightly different, and that is found in the book of Rabbi Yitzchak of Vienna called the Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah, it's a beautiful sefer. Rabbi Willig quotes this in his English language book on Hilchos Shabbos on page 51. However, the source that he gives over there does not seem to be correct. It seems to me that the correct source in the Or Zeruah is Hilchos Shabbos Simin Samach Beis. The Or Zeruah writes, that tavlin means spices is something that does not appear like you're cooking. Ela mishum mituke ta'ama. It's only something that adds flavor. Dipa umim regilin litain tavlin bitavshil tsonin lamatko. Says the Or Zeruah, tavlin adds flavor. And I know that because sometimes you put spices even in cold food to contribute flavor. Cooking means something that you need hot water to effectuate. But when it comes to tavlin, they will give off their flavor even in cold water. Therefore, it is not considered, therefore, in order to be tavlin, it has to be something that gives off flavor in cold water. Cooking means something that needs hot water to give off its flavor. Now, what's the status of an onion, gentlemen? Does an onion give flavor in cold water? Leave your onion soaking in cold water, Heint Bismargen. My understanding is that an onion will not contribute flavor. Tea will, no? tea will contribute flavor. You leave it soaking for a long time, right? There's a thing, cold brewed tea. Now, you can leave it for a long time. It will give flavor. So that will be spices according to the Arzarua. But onion would not be a spice according to the Arzarua, because onion does not give flavor when it's cold. This dispute that we mentioned between the Magen Avraham and the Taz as to whether an onion is considered spice. The Magen Avraham says an onion is considered spice because for the Magen Avraham, the definition of spice is something that is not the primary item which is cooked. The Taz, however, says onions are not. And the explanation for that might be, again, you have to look at the Taz. He says this a little differently. But I would contend that the explanation for the Taz, the onions are not spice, is because by definition, a spice is something that contributes flavor even when cold. An onion, again, someone can do an experiment tonight. Leave an onion overnight in water and then drink the water and tell me if the water tastes oniony. And by the way, try it with an onion that still has the peel on it. Right? I'm not sure. But my guess is, I'm not sure. My guess is that an onion will not give off flavor. My guess is that an onion will not give off flavor when it just sits in cold water for a long time. Jake, I cut you short a minute ago. No? I thought you had a comment. Okay.
Maybe?
Nady, yes.
So that would take away the issue of Bishel Bechlal or Mechzikim Vashel?
Only Mechzikim Vashel.
Uh-huh.
Right? In other words, Mechzikim Vashel, let's say in the Klisheni or whatever. The Chazanish has a Mechzikim Vashel. If the only issue in the Klisheni is Mechzikim Vashel, so then it does not apply to spices. And we have two different definitions of spices. Either a spice is something that is secondary in the cooking process, or a spice is something that will even give off flavor when it is cold.
I thought Rav Shach said you can make tea in a Kli Rishon for this kind of reasoning, because it's only it'll give off flavor anyways. And
remember, Tav when I cannot put in a Kli Rishon. I'm not allowed to put spices in a Kli Rishon, so let's say tea is spices. Let's say. But I still can't make tea in the Kli Rishon. I can only make tea in the Kli Sheni, according to Reb Chaim, because it's spices.
I have to double check. I thought I heard a chef say that you could even do it in Kli Rishon for this kind of
No. No. Let me say it again. No. Only in the Kli Sheni.
Okay.
And what's considered the Kli Rishon here? Is the kumkum itself the Kli Rishon, or when I first pour it into a cup, is that the Kli Rishon?
So normative Judaism is that the kumkum itself is the Kli Rishon, and when I pour it into a cup, it's called the Kli Sheni. The Chazon Ish likes complicating matters, and we'll have to discuss this later on. The Chazon Ish says that the first cup, if the water comes from the urn into that first cup, Chazon Ish says that first cup is a Kli Rishon. But normal Judaism is not like the Chazon Ish. Okay, gentlemen. Jake, you had a comment now? Or?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, we have these two versions of Mechzikim Vashel, and it might be Machlokas, Magen Avraham Taz on the Shulchan Aruch, which one is the correct Mechzikim Vashel. At the end of the day, we don't care about any of this because we throw away this opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, or this version of Rabbeinu Tam.
Okay, so So what you're saying now is a point that I want to discuss tomorrow. In other words, yes, but I want to develop it more tomorrow. It's also worth noting that the whole issue of Mechzikim Vashel, which the Magen Avraham quotes, and the Magen Avraham notes it's against Shulchan Aruch, for some reason the Mishnah Brura in Se'if Katan Lamed Daled quotes the Magen Avraham of Mechzikim Vashel as a matter of halacha. Right? So that is interesting. Again, this plays into Mishnah Brura stringent man. But it seems to me, okay, this is a chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah. I'll just leave it like that. Okay, gentlemen, so you should have a good day and all the best. Take care.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.